I am unashamed. What about you?
This past weekend, we had a Corona quarantine survival party at my house, because you had the Corona run through.
Because you know, my son got it, Reed, and he didn't even know.
I didn't know that. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah, he got it. But he's like, you know, not much happened. But what's weird is now he has to quarantine for 14 days.
Right.
Well, his wife, who works at a hospital, which you think, well, that's where he got it. Well, she hadn't got it. And Reed said, trust me, if you can transmit it, she should have it. So I figured what that meant.
Yeah.
And he's like, she has no signs. And
so anyway, so we got everybody together. Everybody had to go there 2 weeks, Tony and Phyllis stayed at our house, and then I got it sanitized and came home. I stayed at the beach 2 weeks. So we're going to have a party because we survived this thing. You know, we need to get back together. You know, so Jay smoked us a tenderloin, which was delicious, and we had a great time. So Phyllis and Tony asked us about Granny, your mom, being on The Price is Right. If we still had that recording of her being on The Price is Right. And so Anna said, yeah, I got it on DVD. So we watched it.
How hard did you laugh?
Oh, my goodness. And I'd forgotten how crazy our Uncle Harold was. He had an LSU shirt on there. I don't know if you remember this. Well, yeah. And he's running around on the stage. He's going, LSU, because they had all these college kids there. You know,
it was college kid day.
Yeah, exactly.
And there's our granny who was like, 65?
Oh, no. 70? She was 84.
Oh, 84.
She was 84.
Had a big hat.
One.
Yeah. Oh, well, that was
well, so... here's what's interesting. She halfway raised me, and while we were down here getting everything sorted, and they lived right beside us, and I couldn't even understand her. She was so country on the Price is Right. I'm like, running back. What'd she say?
It was so bad. I had forgotten how bad it was compared to everybody else.
She
said 1,200, Bob.
Yeah, they would just hold up a little jar of pickles. You know, how much is that? You know, and Ma would say $2.79. And bingo. That's what it was. I said, Ma, how did you know what all those little things cost?
Well, because all she did every morning was watch The Price is Right.
Well, so she said, I've been watching The Price is Right.
Here was what was interesting. So this is way back.
Won cars and...
Well, she won both showcases, which is very rare.
Yeah, we figured it out. It was, I think it was 1999. I can't remember exactly.
How much? It was like $40,000,
$50,000 and stuff. Well, yeah, it was a lot. So, but here's what happened. So she gets called down early on the first half of the show. If you're familiar with The Price is Right, you know, you get three up on the first half and three up on the second half. Well, she goes all the way through, and they kept scalding her because she would have good bids, but they go $1 over. If they go $1 over, you can't go over. That's right.
The price is
so right. She was just getting scalded. And it was so funny because later when we were talking to Granny about it, I said, what about that little, there was some guy had a shirt that was he had had since he was a kid that had Price is Right. And he was just crazy acting. I said, what about that kid? What was the story with him? She said, oh, he was so obnoxious and despisable. And then she said, and then the other one just kept overbidding. You know, she was just like, she was serious. So she finally gets up on the last one. The guy scalded another guy with the $1 over. So she wins it to get on stage. And then, like you said, she just blitzed it. I mean, like, she played the mountain
climber.
She
didn't just win. She dominated. It was a dominating performance, which... We didn't say this, but she called her shot back here. She called Harold because she knew he was the only one crazy enough to actually go along with this plan.
She said, come
get me because I'm going to go win The Price is Right. I'm not going to go be on The Price is Right. I'm going to go win it.
She went Babe Ruth.
He's like, okay, what time you may pick you up? You know, I mean,
so she hated
well, Harold had a lot in common with Cy. But he was just a more sophisticated on the outside, but just as crazy.
A sophisticated Silas.
Yep.
That's right. That's what he was. And he's passed away now, so we can talk about him. But he took her. He and Mary, my cousin Jean, who lives out in California now, and they took her, and she blitzed it. She won a trip to Fort Lauderdale during spring break, which she didn't take because you'd have to fly back to L.A. She won two cars.
Well, it's kind of funny when an 84-year-old woman goes
to spring
break.
She won quite a bit of cash.
She won two cars, and she won money, and then she won a full set of, like, a refrigerator, stove, like a full kitchen.
Do you know what I noticed too, Al, is when the tax man showed up, you know, when you think only you watch these game shows.
No, that's what's really sad.
It's not something you think about. Because you're like, oh, they won $50,000. They're rich now. Yeah, like a week later, there's.
Oh, she had ma'am. She had to sell one of the two cars
to pay the taxes
on all the stuff she won.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, just think about how ridiculous this is. An 84-year-old woman, lifelong dream. Doesn't matter, Al. I mean, it really makes me mad every time.
At least I can say my mother, she did win outright the price.
So,
is right.
So that's what got me to thinking. I thought. When I look back at the Robertson family, the most surreal things we've experienced. I mean, like, that's just random. That was before we had a TV show. But I thought about
it. She should have got taken the spring break trip with all the kids, and that would have been the first TV show in our family.
That's right.
That would have been must-see TV.
Goodness. With her going around just
because my grandma is like one of her sons that I won't mention that has no censor or filter. He will say whatever it comes to his mind. I don't want to say who it is because I want to embarrass him. But whatever she's thinking, she said it.
She did. And she didn't hold back. When she was talking about my little friends, you know, Bill Phillips, she said, oh, he's the most repulsive person I've ever met.
Well, she'd say
and she said to his face, get that hat off, you obnoxious person.
Well, they'd come in, because she would always fix a plate for a stranger, which was awesome.
Yep.
That was great. But then when the stranger would come in, like W.E., she'd be like, get that hat off or I knock it off. He's like,
well,
yes, ma'am.
Well, you know what's funny is, Jay, so everybody has like our cousins, especially like the Dashers and all them, the people that just were around Granny a couple times a year, they come in for, you know, Thanksgiving or Christmas, they just thought she was mean. And I mean, they still say that. They never got close to her.
She came across as mean.
We lived with her.
Yeah, if you knew her. It's just the way it was.
It's just the way it was. It was just
that's why we're not the most compassionate people in the world by nature.
That's right. Because we learned it from our granny.
Well, yeah, she's a tough woman.
She was. But so Phyllis was just watching it and thinking, this is so. Because think about it. She doesn't know. She never had a chance to know Granny. And she's sitting there the whole time saying, I can't believe this is my grandmother. You know, she's watching her. And of course, you know, she just saw that one slice of her.
Ma made it to 96.
96. She did. But, Jace, I thought about you being on Missy and Willie and Corey presenting at the CMA. I mean, I think about some of the crazy things that have happened.
We have a Christmas album that went platinum.
And we,
you know, people introduce me on some of these speaking deals, and they're like, had an album that went platinum. But people are looking around like, what? He must have misspoke.
That's right. And then
somebody called me and said, we're going to do an album. I said, a what? What kind of album? They said, you know, a singing album. I said,
Phil, that was me.
I said, y'all have gone completely nuts.
No, when
we're going back to the big studio,
was?
I mean, and I find myself singing with George Strait, who I've never met him. But
you're welcome.
They had me talking to George Strait. They had pictures of me standing with George Strait.
You know why?
I've never seen George Strait.
You know why? Because George Strait liked you.
That's right.
They went, look, Willie and Corey. And,
by the way,
Missy.
Unashamed audience, you need to go find it. What's it called? Duck the Halls?
Duck the Halls.
You need to find you this Christmas CD. It's amazing.
You watch that Access TV on how long it took these rock and roll groups to do an album. Well, when they call about the album, I'm not kidding. 2 weeks later, I can't even carry a tune in a bucket. So I get up there.
But Phil, you mainly just talk.
And I asked the old Ramrod from Nashville, and I said, do you actually think getting this bunch of rednecks together, you think you're going to sell anything? He said, it'll go platinum.
He was right.
Buddy Cannon.
Look,
Buddy.
I said,
Buddy,
what?
Buddy has produced.
Platinum. What exactly? He said, that's just high.
Unless you sell a million copies of it.
Awesome.
I thought it was
a
big joke, but that old guy was dead serious, and I looked up, and it did go platinum.
And I'm serious. It's really good. I was shocked at how good it is.
Well, what Buddy said on first day, I mean, because we made a lot of connections, because Willie, you know, through Buck Commander, it's a lot of his friends are country music singers.
That's right. Luke.
And, you know, there's jokes about it. They're like, you know, in the country music world, if you can sing, great, but it's optional. Let's face it.
Tell me
I'm
about
just
it.
Being honest. I mean, it's more about branding, yep. who you are. But Buddy, on the first day, because my wife, you know, everybody knows Missy. She can sing.
She can sing.
And my son.
Yeah, really, the only ones that can sing is your wing.
Well, my son, Reed, I mean, he can sing the phone book. Yep. Just give it to him and look out. And so when we got up there, and I was kind of like you, because Willie and Missy, basically, Willie's like, I'll take care of the business side of it. Y'all take care of the singing side. So Missy and Buddy worked together. Yep. They came up with the songs. And so Missy's a bulldog about it,
yeah,
too. But I said, Buddy, you actually think this will work? And he's like, oh, y'all actually have some talent. He's like, this is going to be awesome. So I was thinking, really? And guess what? To this day, we still sell a ton. No marketing and they're even talking about.
Well, how come if that's true, why don't I get a check every once in a while?
Here's what happened.
Because I noticed, you know,
where's
when
my check?
Jay said, we're going to take care of the business side. Yeah. I'm like, I kept waiting for the big check from the platinum record. I never saw it.
Well, so Kay got it.
I was there just for.
No, here's what happened. Everyone who participated.
Is there any money in this? Said, no, you got to sell a million copies. You might make a little.
I think you got the business.
We sold a million.
I think you got the business end of
I
the business.
Didn't make it.
This was not planned. No, you made something. Everybody who participated in the album got a check. You had a check. So Kay got that check, and you received payment for your involvement.
Yeah.
But the four owners of the company, Missy, Jace, Willie.
That's where the big bucks went.
Well, we took the risk. We put the money in.
Oh boy, I never knew that. This has turned out to be quite the revealing episode.
I would
here.
Love to take credit for that being my idea, but Willie said, "Here's
boy,
how this
you
is
loaded now.
Work.
Y'all sold a platinum record." I'm like, "There ain't no money."
Well, there was some money somewhere, but it didn't come out
of
your
come
way.
My way.
Well, you got paid. You just your wife spent it.
We probably spent that quick. Let's take a break.
One of the best measures of how corrupt a country is how rich its leaders get while they're in office. They're not so good at passing laws or governing, but they're great at investing.
Imagine if every American could make money off of war.
In 103 days, that position ends up gaining around 103%. So she made, you know, $2 million plus her original two, so $4
million. I signed, co-sponsored a bill and made too much voluminous flair over it that I wouldn't be seated. So I shut up. The threats that fly around are just absolutely insane.
The Blaze Originals team traveled to Washington, D.C., home to one of the most brilliant financial minds in the world, Nancy Pelosi. In our documentary, Bought and Paid For, How Politicians Get Filthy Rich, we spoke to reps Matt Gaetz and Chip Roy, George Santos, and the bane of D.C. elites, Unusual Whales, to expose how our elected officials are beating the stock market and, more importantly, what we can do. To watch today, go to congressgetsrich.com and use code RICH to get $30 off an annual subscription to Blaze TV.
So my point is, and also another surreal moment was we all flew to Las Vegas and had a musical with Broadway actors and singers that was actually incredible. Wouldn't you say that, Jay? I mean,
I thought it was good, but it lasted about a week.
About a month. It's the best musical nobody ever saw.
But here's what I learned about that. It's because I've been to a bunch of musicals because my wife, she's a musical person.
Yeah.
Now, did I enjoy them? No. The only one I liked was the one about us.
Yeah.
Well, that was the death nail. Because all these ones I didn't like, they're famous. They're
That's
you know,
the ones
people,
everybody goes to.
This is hallowed ground. They cost $100 just to go see.
Right.
And somehow we got blackballed on that one.
No, we didn't get blackballed. It's like if you make something that redneck type people like, it's not fit for
but
the
But Dad is right. There was an
audience.
There was an element because
I really don't believe. It's not that crowd. They don't.
No, but I just knowing behind the scenes, because Dad had some dust ups with certain communities that are very involved in musicals, and I think that's why we. Why would they send us to Vegas?
I mean,
we weren't a Vegas show.
Who goes to musicals? Do you go to musicals?
I go to musicals when I go to New York. I enjoy musicals.
No. You're an exception to the rule. Phil would never. I'm not going unless my wife. And because like my wife, who likes musicals, she looked at it and said it's too shallow.
But what I liked about it, what I liked about the storyline was basically it was told from Willie and Corey's perspective of their book, which is kind of how they met, and so they were kind of the core story was their love story. But then they had a great thing with Psy, which was hilarious. It was called Ladies Man was the name of the song. And this actor, singer that played him, he looked a lot like him. And he was great. And then, but the
because that's true. People don't realize that people, there's women out there who are in love with Psy.
That's right.
He's married.
Right.
And I see it every time I go on a trip. There are women who literally scream and holler and
now
cry.
That is scary.
But true.
I can't figure it out.
But true.
I think all of this, what you said, though, I mean, because to me, God chose a bunch of, you know, people that look like us and said, oh, I'm going to share Jesus through them. So all these opportunities came. And this is my opinion on what happened to try to explain, because it's not like we did it.
Right.
I mean, it all just... I mean, like my grandma said, I'm going to go on The Price is Right. That's got to be the luckiest thing. If you just looked at it from people's perspective, one, you got to get picked. You drive out there. Then you got to get up. Then she won. Then she won both. I mean, it's just like, luckiest thing I've ever seen in my
life. That's what got me thinking about it. And then on the musical, Dad, the core part of the gripping, because, you know, they're doing acting and singing, you know, musicals have a story. Well, they show the scene. They have a scene where basically you come to your senses. Like, you know, they showed that. That was part of the thing. You had a Bible, and you know they're hamming it up. And you met the guy that played you. Remember we flew somewhere with him.
I don't remember.
Well, and he was pretty good. But so he just throws the Bible. He's like, I'm not doing anything with this God. You know, just it was really like watching the acting was amazing. So they were taking basically your life before you were a Christian and condensing it into that one scene. And then finally, you basically drop to your knees and you're just like, I got to change my life. And then you even say, the one playing mom is like, will you forgive me? And she said, yes. I mean, we're all in tears. Like, you know, it was amazing.
Yeah, that's why I liked it, but I think that's why it didn't work.
Well, maybe so. They've talked about trying to revive it at some point. I think Willie's trying to get ownership of it, maybe because in Branson or someplace like that, it probably worked. Like, well, you know, but I mean, it was a Broadway
idea.
Level.
If you make a redneck musical, go
find some rednecks.
Find some rednecks who will watch it.
Yep.
You know, you go to Vegas.
Well, people go to Vegas to.
We may be outside the circle of the musical crowd.
You think?
Yeah. Well, I'm
leaning.
We platinum with the
country music.
You know?
Is our audience? You see what I mean? That's
right.
This people hunt and fish, and it's a little different.
I think they could rework it in a Branson audience, and it could work
as long as I don't have to be in it. I do. There was some. I have some special friendships with some people that worked on that musical. That because you know what really was shocking about meeting them is when we met all the characters who played it. Of course, they had been in
all kinds of stuff.
What's the one?
Wicked. One of them.
Yeah, Wicked.
One of them that played Corey is in Wicked right now.
Yeah, that's right.
We just saw her.
What's her name?
I can't remember.
Well, I had a brain cramp.
I'm terrible at that.
But she's awesome.
She's a great
And look,
person.
Every time my wife goes to New York, they either go eat lunch with each other. And they have a great friendship. But what's weird is the first time I met them, when we walked into Willie's old house, they were all in there, and they sang some of the songs a cappella. And I was like, well, I'll tell you one thing. They can sing. It was moving.
Oh, these
it
people.
Was hair stand up on the back of your neck, just their voices.
So the one that played Lisa, and this is an amazing story. We met him in Vegas this first night, all the ones that played us. And there was, you know, the guy that played me and the guy that played Lisa. And the lady that played Lisa, she's young. So she was a young Lisa, you know, in the thing, is from the Steinbrenner family. Her grandpa was George Steinbrenner, who owns the Yankees.
Huh.
And so it was really interesting, but, you know, she wasn't going by any name. She was trying to make her own way in Broadway herself, and she's a very talented singer. But we developed a friendship that still goes to this day, just like what Jay said. Every time we go to New York, her name is Haley, We look her up, and she met her husband. Her husband is a talent agent. She met him at our musical, the guy she's married to now, which is really amazing. So he was the director's agent, and that's how they met. Now they have a daughter together. It was just really incredible. We still are close to them. We went to Tampa to do an event. We actually went to lunch with her mom, who's Steinbrenner's daughter. Wonderful, awesome people. And, you know, all that came about. And that's what I'm saying. I just thought about all these surreal moments.
But that's
meeting the president. I mean, just think about stuff that's happened. And you look at it, you think, we're just a bunch of, you know, rednecks down here on the river. Yeah, but, I mean, God has opened up some doors.
I think he has. Jenna Claire Mason was the girl in Wicked. She is one of my favorite human beings on the planet.
And she is talented.
She's awesome. So,
pretty amazing stuff. I mean, that all of it. It's just, it got me thinking. When I was watching The Price is Right of what God has done, and we give him all the credit and the glory for that, by the way, too. So, interesting stuff. Y'all ready to get into John?
John 13, that's where we left off, if we have a place where we leave off, because we tend, if you hadn't noticed for a viewer, we tend to ramble a bit, but we end up back on Jesus, because that
we don't get far away from Jesus, because that's a good thing, and the Bible, because we love it. So, last time, we talked about leading up to this night, which is the night before Jesus is going to be arrested. And a lot of interesting stuff happens. We kind of laid out the beginning point, which is him washing the feet of his disciples, which, as we discussed last time, is such a moving, powerful thing. And
it shadows the cross in that he cleanses us. He does the work.
Right.
You know, it was his plan through love. And you're seeing the depth of Jesus's love. Meanwhile, he has one of his, you know, close knit core group members, Judas, who's going to betray him, and he knows it. And you have the evil one there present, which is amazing to me, because if this is a shadow of the cross, that God's love is that deep, in that, you know, in Romans 5 says that while we were sinners, Christ died for us.
Right.
Even the betrayers, even those who wouldn't embrace it, you know, he gave his life for everyone. I mean, that's an amazing, talking about a Broadway musical, this love story trumps all love stories.
Which is why I think John mentions that with him. Let's take another break. Being in debt is no good. In fact, the Bible says, neither a borrow nor lender be, was Solomon's.
Leave no debt left outstanding.
Exactly. And yet, people struggle. Certainly, Lisa and I have in our younger life, because you tend to want to live beyond your means. You know,
or you, coronavirus.
Or something hits, I mean, right? Things beyond
some
your...
Some people just...
So there's a lot of different reasons to be in debt, but we all understand we don't want to be there. So one of our sponsors is a company called Bills.com. And one of the things they do is they give you a debt assessment, and it's free, just to help you figure out where to start. Because there's a lot of young families, a lot of young people, they may have student loan debt and all this stuff piled up, and you're like, how do I begin? Because if you're under the mountain of debt, it's very suffocating, because I've been there before. So we want you to go check these guys out. They've helped a lot of people. They've settled over $10 billion in debt, part of the Freedom Financial Network. So go check these guys out at bills.com/Phil. That's bills.com/Phil. They're going to give you a free debt assessment and get you started to get some freedom. So, yeah, I want to get into that. I want to unwrap that, Jace, because so we find out first that we read before that Satan is prompting him, was the way John put it. And then later, when we get down, so Jesus, when we get to verse 18,
well, and that's why I brought up the 30 pieces of silver and the advertising campaign. I brought it into modern day America.
That's right.
If you remember. Because I was like, there's a little deceit going on to make money.
Right.
And in this case, you have one of Jesus's close friends, his followers, betray him over what? 30 pieces of silver that he eventually threw back.
Out of guilt.
And killed himself.
That's right.
That was a terrible plan.
He didn't die well either.
No.
No, it was ugly.
But
down the cliff, just intestines were hanging out.
Yeah, that's an Axe. Oh, it's
like a rated R description of what happened.
He hanged himself, fell down, split his gut open.
Which tells you something, that even being that close to that much power to the Son of God and all the miracles and all of that, and Judas there watching the whole thing, but it was just a sneakiness about him. He was the money keeper,
right?
Kind of slicking a little bit on the money, little stuff,
right?
You know, but you could tell he's a little corrupt. But
well,
the prompting up there. But one, I've told many a person, I said, "This is scary."
Yeah, I want to.
When
I
we
want
start
to get
talking
into
about the evil one, as soon he said, "Who is it?" Lord, which one of us is going to do it? I mean, they're looking around
he
like
he said, the one who dips his bow is the one's good. There's somebody. He made an announcement. One of y'all is going to betray me.
Yeah, and when he said that, dipping the piece of bread, he said, the one I gave this bread to, he's the man. Judas Iscariot, son of Simon. As soon as Judas took the bread, Satan entered into him. That entered into him
is a frightening thing.
Is one of the scariest texts that I've ever read in the Bible.
Yep.
I'm like, boy, when you do something and this happens, Satan enters you. It is everybody is controlled by the evil one. That's what Paul told Timothy.
Well, he said
and
the
world. You gently instruct them in the hope that God will grant them repentance. They'll come to their senses and escape from the trap of the devil who's taken them captive to do his will. But in this case, Jesus let it slide. He let him
well,
go.
Well, that because it fulfilled his plan.
And even the verse up in 18, he said the reason he did the whole bread thing was that was a fulfillment of a prophecy from Psalm 41. He who shares my bread has lifted up his heel against me. That was a messianic prophecy prediction from hundreds of years earlier.
But now, wait a minute. He could have forced this issue at any point. Yeah. He could have just turned Judas into a... If you can raise somebody from the dead, you can also... That also means that you can turn someone into mist in less than a second.
That
just
is
like,
correct.
Psst. But he wanted to do it because of his love. The whole plan, because God is love. So that's why I tend to always lean toward love and grace, because I know that's a characteristic he chose instead of judgment and force. I mean, I told you the other day we were having a debate, because I live some in Austin, Texas, and feels like, well, I heard there's some liberals down there. And I was like, oh, yeah, I saw them. They're protesting here and there down in downtown Austin. I said, but you know what the worst encounter I had when I was in Austin was a religious nut. We were on a little tour. He pulled up in a car and he's like, the judgment of hell is coming on all of you. And he started, you know, calling us homosexuals. And I was there with my wife. I was like, well, I love Jesus, you know, and he was, oh, hell, fire. Then he started dropping F-bombs.
Oh my God.
And I was like, what part of that? Well, you missed that part about the coarse joking and the filthy language. And
yeah, think about the dichotomy of that. How do you square those two up?
Which it was kind of surreal, because and it was actually frightening, you know, because I didn't have a weapon, and he was being really belligerent. I mean, like Missy was like grabbing my hand, you know, because it was when someone just comes up and his eyes are crazy and he's
I witnessed that at the Trump inauguration. It was already chaotic. There were protesters everywhere. Because we were trying to get out of there. Y'all had a ride out. We had to walk out. And, I mean, then these guys who had these big megaphones, and they're just doing the same thing, and they got all these judgments. But it just created an environment of fear and chaos.
Right. Yeah.
And I just thought, this is not the way to reach people, I don't think. I mean, you're it's part,
well,
you know?
Al, they're just, to me, it's no different than this. There's some betrayal that's gone on, and they're sincerely mistaken, maybe. But you're terrorizing the planet and humans. Nobody,
right.
And plus they're not sharing Jesus, and they're not reading.
It sure didn't look like this picture.
They're not reading John 13, I can tell you that.
It didn't look like this
picture.
I heard
that guy, and I'm like, Jesus not dropping F-bombs in between judgment and hell, sir. But, you know.
And we've talked about it on the podcast. The only time you saw Jesus that animated and you could tell he was upset was towards religious leaders.
Yeah.
I mean, the rest of it, he had just sinners, and I mean, he was gentle and taught them about love. And,
that's what,
know,
I always tell everybody.
I'm more sad than I am mad.
Yeah.
Well, I tell everybody, you at some point, every person has to take one of the Gospels and read it for themselves and form an opinion on who God is and Jesus. Because if you just base it on being with some group, or you get that contagion that guy was spewing all this, you know, judgmental hate. It was judgmental hate speech is what it was. I was like, where's the bridge? Where's the bridge home? Because you burned it. I mean, he was like, everybody's burned. I mean, I don't, most of what he said, but he was driving a car. So the law had, unless he was driving it illegally, because I thought this guy needs, he doesn't need to be driving around downtown Austin. Look, and I know he picked on our guy because he had long hair. And he saw me, didn't like the way I looked either. So he was hammering us. And I thought, man.
He's like, dude, you don't even know me.
Well, that's what our guide was saying. But then our guide, I'm pretty sure he wasn't following Jesus because he just responded with every four-letter word in the book. And because he was like, get on out of here, you crazy blankety blank, you know, get away. I mean, we're all just looking around. I'm like, okay, maybe I shouldn't be here.
Well, people have asked, some of our podcast listeners have asked me about, you know, remember a few months back when Seattle was having Chaz and all that, and some guy went in there and was trying to preach to them all. He just decided he was going to wade in with some Jesus, and they just beat the fire out of him, you know. Yeah. And
so there's one here that's going to betray Jesus. Right after that, another one who had been there from the beginning, Peter, he denies that he even knows him. You see what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So, and then Jesus is talking about the comeback. I'll be with you just a little longer, then I'm out of here. He's talking about the comeback.
Right.
So in the midst of all that, you would think this is not looking good because we got them standing up and selling Jesus out on one hand. The other one says, I don't even know who he is. I mean, don't be blaming me. You see what I'm saying?
Yep. Let's take a break. So she's not a new sister. She's a newfound sister. That's what we're calling her now. And my brother-in-law, we were talking the other day about insurance because they just made the move down here. And so they're trying to figure out, you know, how do we figure out insurance prices, all these different things like this. And so we were talking to him. We said, well, you know, we got a guy. And then I said, well, you know what? One of our sponsors is exactly what you need to do. It's called Gabby Insurance, G-A-B-I. And basically, they go in and they check all the different, you know, companies and rates and all that stuff, and they just give you the best rate, you know, and say, here's the people you need to go with. So as far as I know, that's what they're doing, and so we want you guys to check it out too. On average, they save $825 a year for everybody that uses them. So they've got a good track record. They help a lot of people. So it's totally free to check your rate, no obligation. You go to Gabby.com, Gabi.com/unashamed. That's Gabi.com/unashamed and get you some insurance prices.
Yeah, so, what's amazing too, Phil, as you bring that up, is Peter actually said at the end, he said, when Jesus said, what did he say? He said, where I am going, you cannot follow.
Yeah.
Is that in verse 36? But you'll follow. Peter asked, Lord, why can't I follow you? But here's what the key statement. He said, I'll lay down my life for you. And Jesus was like, ha, ha, you're fixing to deny me three times. But how many times have you seen that in relationships in this church? People are like, oh, give my life for them. You know, I've seen married couples, like the husband say, I mean, I told her I'd die for her. I was like, well, where was that attitude when you were sleeping with this other woman? It's like,
yeah, why don't you live
your life is not, but it's kind of like, Peter, you get caught up in the emotion of everything. Right. And in those moments, we say things that are not true. You're not giving your life for. You're saying, oh, I'll give my physical. I'd rather be dead. Because then what? It's over. You don't have to deal with anything. So you can just make this random statement. But I don't believe you that you'll give your life for if you won't even give her your life now.
What's interesting is when Peter said, you know, I'll give my life for you. Jesus said, no, I mean, before it happened, no, you'll deny me three times. You'll
It's like which I wonder
it's
what
meticulously
thought.
Scripted. So
I just wonder what he thought in that moment, because you know he was thinking, "There's no way I would do that." Now Jesus is telling him, and you know, but he's thinking in his mind. You know, he's still thinking. There's like Jay said, he's thinking, "Oh, boy, do you ever have this wrong?" Which is why I think he's the one that took the sword out and cut off the guy's ear at the moment, because he just thought, "I'm going to show Jesus, we're going to fight this out if that's what happens." And Jesus is like, "No,
it's the same thing that happens when they say a hurricane's coming. You're like, "Oh, a hurricane's coming." And we've been through lots of hurricanes, no big deal. But this last one that came through, now when them trees, I'm talking about big trees, started hammering my house, falling in every direction. I no longer thought, "Oh yeah, I've been through a lot of hurricanes. You know, I'll be fine." You know, I was thinking, pretty sure I'm fixed to die right here, because that's what I was thinking.
Big bull pines start falling.
It's like when you're in the middle of that, there's right. nothing anybody can say. That's you kind of lose, you know, whatever you had justified thinking it ain't gonna happen to me. It hit me. I thought it's happening, and I wasn't fearful, but I was anxious because I thought I'm ready to go. I mean, but instead of being stressed out about it, I eventually went to the bed and went to sleep, because I just thought, if I die, I'd rather just be dead while I'm taking a nap in here, you know? I don't want to see the tree fall, because I was going from one end of the house, and then, boom, I'd hear another one fall. I was like, "Oh, I better go on this side."
Because, look, that's a lot of people that died in that hurricane. Yeah. That's how they died. The tree fell across the house.
Sure did.
So I think he thought the same thing. Everything's, you know, flowers and fluffies at
my
this
whole
point,
house but, is surrounded by trees,
oh,
big trees.
But, you know, when you're arrested and there's armed soldiers taking your leader, and
I think that's what did it, is because Peter and all of them kept thinking, still earthly, they kept thinking, "Well, he's fixing to put us, you know, he's fixing to rise." I mean, because he kept talking about the kingdom. Well, they didn't get
they
it.
They kept thinking he was going to whoop the army.
That's right.
And then when they arrested him, they thought, "What were we thinking? That guy's an idiot.
They never thought during the process he's fixing to save the world. They just didn't think.
That's why I told you surrender is never an option that people see as a way to victory. And neither is service. You're never going to convince people that what you got to do to be successful is go around and wash everybody's feet. They're like, "I ain't doing that." They're saying, "Hey, you want to win? You got to give up." What? It doesn't make. That's why the two hardest things to do as a human being: surrender and serve. And those are the two things that he said, this is your path to victory. That's why people say, "I'm not following Jesus. I'm out on that. I'm not surrendering to anybody."
Yep.
And I'm sure not going to wash your feet.
So I made a point last week in my sermon. I was talking about when Lazarus was raised. You know, he has an interesting discussion with Martha, and she says, "I believe in you. You are the resurrection and the life." You know, she says, "I believe." But then as soon as he goes over and says, "Take that stone off of there," she says, "Oh, Lord, he's been in there 4 days. You don't want to do that." And I found that fascinating, that her belief was that he could do anything, but in her own mind, when it came to actually rolling the stone away, it was like, "Oh, he's dead and stinking." And I said, that's so much how we think. And so I said in my sermon, I was like, Jesus then turned around to her and said, "Hold your nose and watch what I'm fixing to do."
Because
you know, I mean, that's what happened. But it's that we're so enslaved to the world, many people are, that it's hard to see Jesus. And I think it's exactly what happened to Peter. And you're right, the more chaotic that night became, because they didn't just arrest him, they immediately started beating the fire out of Jesus. I mean, the Jewish guards started first on him, and then later got to the Romans.
That would be a good bumper sticker. Hold your nose and watch this. And then have the verse under it.
Yeah.
Hey, there's somebody, get on that. Somebody get out of it.
Oh, we get a lot of marketing.
Hold your nose and watch this. But have it a resurrection verse.
Yeah, that's right.
Now, if that's not funny, but profound.
It is.
And yet powerful.
That's right. Well, I need to do it because I came up with it.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to miss out on the business.
I mean, he already, look.
Hey, welcome to the club. We went platinum and I never knew it.
Phil, you're bitter about this.
No, I'm not bitter.
The check.
I just never heard the cha-ching.
You need to have a meeting when you get home. And
I never
say,
said a word about it. That's been years ago now, but I just.
That's
I,
funny.
You got wondered. Paid, Phil, but it probably went to Kay and she spent
I just saw all the rock and rollers. The rock and rollers trying for the hit, you know. Kansas, the group out there, the great group I love to listen
oh,
to.
Oh, they're good.
You know, they finally came up with a hit, you know, Wayward. My wayward son. And they hit it on that one, and it went platinum, and they were all like, boy, we had a platinum record. They were all up there holding the record, you know. But I said, yeah, we went platinum one time.
One time. Let's take our last break. So you didn't know this, Dad. The lead singer for Kansas, I can't remember his name, he had developed a relationship somehow with Tommy Inman. Somehow they met.
Well, tell them who Tommy Inman is.
Well, we talked about him. He
I
preached
know,
the
but
sermon.
This may be the first time they ever listened.
He's one of our elders at
that's,
our church.
That's good that Tommy's working with him.
Well,
he's a great baseball. He's a coach.
Yeah, you
baseball
told the story.
Where he well, I didn't say he's a coach.
No.
But he loves the Lord, has a very high pitched voice and that you made fun of.
And he teaches Bible at our local Christian school. He's a really great guy. But somehow they connected, and they actually did a song, a Duck Dynasty. It may have been about you. It was about you or Duck Dynasty or something. They never sold it or anything, but they just did it for fun. Where, because, you know, that guy's
Steve
got pretty
Steve Walsh?
High, I guess so, yeah.
Steve Walsh,
yeah.
lead singer
for
Kansas.
And so they did some song back when the show was going on together, just kind of. You know, Tommy wrote it, but they redid Wayward Son to make something about either you or the family or something. Huh. But I don't know. It never went anywhere.
Maybe it was Ducks in the Wind.
I think that is it.
Well, because I saw the songs there, Carry On,
Ducks
Wayward
in the
Son.
Wind?
Dust in the Wind. Dust in the Wind.
That was their second big hit.
No, but they changed it to Ducks.
They changed it to Ducks in the Wind.
In yeah.
And that was about our family or whatever. Yeah, it was pretty funny. Tommy was so excited about it. And of course, they thought they'd probably sell it. But most great ideas about people I had back in those days, you know, they never quite rose to the level, you know, to get there.
Said he was a graduate of Christian Brothers High School in Atlanta, Georgia.
Yeah, I think he's a believer. I think so. I don't know. I'd assume that, especially if he was a fan of the show. So back to this to just wrap up because we don't have much time left about Peter. So Peter denies Jesus three times, and then we find out from the other Gospels, and we'll look at this a little bit later, that basically. You know that the worst feeling in the world was for him to think, because Jesus, you know, dies, and mm-hmm. so he's thinking he's never going to see him again, and the last thing he did was deny him three times. I mean, just think about the guilt that he would have carried.
When we get to John 20.
Right, 21.
21. Do you have this moment?
Yeah.
Because that is, most people, even in the criminal world, they're like, mainly because they're cowards. They're like, they do all this crime, and then they're like, well, I'll just kill myself in the end because I don't have to answer. Au contraire. You because it's not over. We all know that. Right. I mean, there's a resurrection of us and the wicked.
Yep.
There's going to be some consequences to this. But you're right, for Peter to have this conversation with Jesus, I mean, I almost feel sorry for Peter. Would have been the most awkward, embarrassing thing ever.
John 13:35, which we always quote over and over and over, all men, I give you a new command, love one another as I've loved you, and just wash their feet, so you must love one another. And this is his parting words, really. All men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. He said, that's what it's all going to come down to.
Yep.
Well, that right there supersedes you look at Judas who betrayed him, and Jesus had said, I don't know him. He said, look, you just got to learn to love. And, you know,
Phil, you bring up a good point. It's like, because you brought up, we were making fun about the Christmas album and singing it. Well, we was all family. We got along, which is one reason it was good.
Yep.
And the guest singers that we had were fans of the show or whatever. So it was all a fun venture. Nobody felt like, oh,
that's
I have
right.
to go do it. It was all fun. I even sang a song. You know, it was
even fun. In the producing it up there at the in the
they laughed. Yeah, yeah. It was like one of the best times we ever had doing it. But a couple of years ago when Missy and I was doing the worship at our church, and we were formulating a group of people. You know, I remember telling Missy, we got an argument, because she's the, I have zero talent. I mean, in fact, when I sang in front of Mr. Cannon, he said, because we sang the song, and he said,
tell him what the song was. It was the,
Baby, It's Cold.
Yeah, Cold Outside.
That was how I did it. Baby, It's Cold Outside. And she's singing like a bird. But I sang it at first. I'm not going to do it today. I'm not nervous about it. I'm just saying, once you've figured out the best way to do it, I'm not going back. And so I sang it the first time, and he said, Jace, is there anything else you can do? And so I didn't know how to answer that question, because I thought, is there anything else I can do in Nashville? Because we were in Nashville. I thought, in Nashville? And he said, no, with the song. And I thought, did I get the words wrong?
That was a nice way of him saying is, this ain't working.
Yeah, I was gathering that. I said, did I mess the words up?
He was trying to protect your feelings.
And he said, no. He said, you got the words right. And he was kind of thinking, and Missy was staring at the wall, and I thought, oh, they didn't like it. So I said,
you finally realize we're having an awkward moment
here.
Yeah,
this is an event. I said, just come on out and say it. You're not going to hurt my feelings. I could have told you this wasn't going to work. I knew it was going to work. He said, no, it's fine. He said, you got a couple notes, right? So we can work off that. That's what he said. I said, what if I just, it's kind of a flirtatious song. I said, what I'm really good at, and I'm not good at singing. I said, I'm good with flirting with my wife, because I gave him a little funny speech. I was like, I put all my passions toward one woman for life. So I said, why don't I just flirt with her and talk to her? He said, let's try that. It was like, here's another idea. So we did.
And
so
he's
she
thinking
starts
anything's better than what we just did. Yeah. He didn't say that.
So she starts singing. I'm like, baby, it's cold outside. Well, that, and look, we did that one take. He said, I think we got it. Good idea. I said, that's it? And he's like, perfect. You nailed it. So they took a couple of
this reminds
notes.
Me of the Andy Griffith episode where they kept lowering the microphone for
it
Barney.
Was so embarrassing. So look, there's like
from trash to
treasure.
Yeah, so look, there was like two notes that I got right out of the whole song the first time. So there's twice in there you hear me singing. I got it right. The rest of the time, I'm like, baby, I'm telling you, it's cold.
Oh, I laugh every time so, I hear it, because I knew the story, but it makes it funny.
I'm not even sure why we were talking. Oh, I was saying, but when I formed the worship team, Miss and I were arguing, because I said, look, she's like, no, let me handle this. I was like, nope. I said, here's what, you're not listening. I said, what we need is a group of feet washers who hopefully can sing. Because I said, we're going to be changing some things. It's going to be uncomfortable. So, you know, we were trying to really make some changes in how we worship and how we sing. And you saw that. Yeah. And I was thinking, we need as few of ego, you know, maniac, real opinionated. We need as few of those as possible. I said, don't go for God-given talent. And this was the line that I used. I said, don't go after the most talented, the most God-given talent. I said, go after those who have been God-inspired, and they're feet washers who love people and want to be involved. And that's what we did. She said, I agree with you. And so our little crew, who we got to be really close to, mm-hmm. and, you know, we weren't making judgments on them. We just had seen their lives and their attitude, and we're like, feet washer. And so that's why it was so smooth.
Yeah.
I mean, because everybody came. And I really, the reason I'm bringing that up, just think about our church leaderships and our church as a whole. If everybody had that attitude, what more would be done?
Yeah.
I mean, it would be fantastic if everybody's saying, let me wash your feet, with the ideas of what we're going to do. I thought the way you guys built it
was great, because you basically pulled everybody together. They called, it was a class. They started off and they called the Holy Roar, and then Jace was teaching, mm-hmm. you know, the Bible with that idea that this whole thing is about us being like Christ. And where it really showed up to me, it wasn't just the upfront stuff y'all did, but when the pandemic hit, all of a sudden we're like, what are we going to do about, you know, we want to be able to worship with our church family, but we're spread out all over the parish. And so we filmed some videos with that group.
Oh, yeah.
And it's still one of my favorite things. The same studio we did all the stuff for the Christmas album, and they're in there singing. And they just said, let's just go worship. And we recorded all those sessions. And then we were able to show those with our preaching. And so it just felt like we kept our unity of our church.
Yeah,
you know, during a hard time. So
what we did was, and I'm sure people will ask questions. We didn't go to, you know, from Acts to Revelation and say, you know, what is the, you know, because he says there's three things when you worship in Ephesians. You sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs. You know, we didn't. I would mention that. I would teach on that, the difference in those types of music and how you sing. What we focused on was the four Gospels, where all these spontaneous moments of worship happen, where they saw something awesome that Jesus did, and then it says, you know, like when Jesus walked on the water, and they're like, well, then they fell down and worshiped. So we would try to have the sermon Jesus-centered and have a spontaneous, planned worship experience from that that was not normal, you know, where the audience was like, they didn't know what's coming next. I mean, and all kinds of music. So, and I really think it worked. I mean, it was a really good adventure.
We're out of time. Don't forget Jesus Politics. Check that out. Amazon, give us some reviews on there so we can keep pushing that out as well, especially in this current time we're living in. So we'll see you next time. Thanks for listening to the Unashamed Podcast. Help us out by rating us on iTunes. And don't miss an episode by subscribing on YouTube, and be sure to click that little bell to get notified about new episodes. And for even more content that you won't get anywhere else, subscribe to Blaze TV at blazetv.com/unashamed.